They are understood by the highly intelligent and self-realized Brahmins. But the present age of Kali is full of ignorant men. Even those who are born by a Brahmin father are, in the present age, no better than the sutras of the women. The twice-born men, namely the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas, are expected to undergo a cultural purification process known as samskaras. But because of the bad influence of the present age, so-called members of the Brahmana and other higher order families are no longer a family culture. They're called the Dija Bandhus, or the friends and family members of the twice born. But these Dija Bandhus were classified among the Shudras and the Shudra Vyasa Deva Vedas in various branches. reflecting on this verse. And recently, His Holiness Prashant Maharaj was here. It was one point he made that was really powerful, really profound. And then he was talking about how the Bhagavatam is like a desire tree. And he gave the example of Pita Maharaj and how different calves were brought by the Buddha. And depending on who you were, you were able to extract whatever your desired goal was. So it's like a desire tree. It said the essence of the Bhagavatam, or really diving deeply into the Bhagavatam, is entering into a relationship with the Bhagavatam.
Can you hear me?
Not
low. My voice is very low today.
Like very in the street.
We want to hear the feedback, though. It's going to come.
Is this better?
Yes.
No. I'll speak softly. I'll compensate. But many times, in so many stories and pastimes, devotees of the Lord will say that I'm not in a business relationship with you, my Lord. I'm not doing anything to get anything in return. So Maharaj was saying how what the Bhagavatam really gives is Krishna Prema. And Krishna Prema is a relationship. It's not we're not getting something from it. We're entering into a profound relationship. I was actually just listening to a class talking about this relationship, that a perfect guru is not different than a perfect disciple. And in relation to Vyasadeva, this first here, he was the spiritual master of Sukadeva Swami, he was the speaker of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. And he was a Brahmavadi. That famous verse was actually spoken in relation to Sukadeva Swami, Atma-Atma-Sjimanyo, right? In the Bhagavatam, the first time that verse appeared was in reference to Sukadeva Swami. Right? So even liberated souls who realize they're not this body, they're attracted to Krishna. So even he had a transformation. And Vyasadeva, when you hear his story, he was dissatisfied. He was dejected. Actually, the Acharyas explain that there's actually a very deep significance of Vyasadeva's dissatisfaction, because there's so many theories out there and speculations about the onslaught of Kali Yuga. I mentioned this in the past before, how there was one Bhagavad reciter, I'm not really sure what the source was, he was saying that Kali Yuga, what marked the beginning of Kali Yuga was when Pariksha Maharaj called and did Sandhikarishi with Snake. And I heard it last, and I knew when I heard that, I knew that was total nonsense. But then I heard it class by Rokhan Swami, and he was going on and on, and he said, this is nonsense. it's a fact, if you read the commentaries of our Acharyas, there's no reference to that. This is all ordained to the will of the Supreme Lord that Bhriksha Maharaj was overcome by thirst and garlanded Samakrishi by snake. And I was just actually reading a few days ago that in so many of the transmissions of the spiritual knowledge, our acharyas actually say that this was divine arrangements. So Vyasadeva, Vishnu, he said that Krishna engineered Vyasadeva to be dissatisfied so that he could. Actually, this is a very interesting point. Before that, he makes the point that before Narada Muni came to meet Vyasadeva, he had already compiled all the 18 Puranas and the Upanishads and the Vyasas and everything. So, Srimad Bhagavatam was one of the 18 Puranas. Has anyone ever thought of that? But the Srimad Bhagavatam as it is in its current state is as a result of his dissatisfaction. And he had already written the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he makes the point that the current state of Bhagavatam is actually different than the initial state. That he revised it, he updated it into the current state. But this is a very important point that the stories that we hear about in the Bhagavatam and other scriptures, it's the tendency to identify or to see them as ordinary is very strong. And we hear, hear about, for instance, Vyasadeva. How was Vyasadeva born? From the union of Rasha Muni and Sadhavati, which was out of wedlock. Apparently out of lust. So the tendency is that, okay, he's just an ordinary Rasha Muni, he's just an ordinary person that's subject to falling prey to lust, just like I am. That we hear about these great personalities and we think they're ordinary, and our acharyas vehemently, very strongly warn us against this. And just taking this example, I was just reading the story of how Vyasa was born. So Satyavati was born in the womb of a fish. And she was an upstart in a previous life. There's a backstory to it. And she was impregnated in such a way that her virginity remained intact. And it was through mantra. And Vyasadeva was born the same day as conception. And she was given the womb. That her son would be the greatest exponent of any literature in the whole world. It's been quoted in this very famous pastime. Srila Prabhupada saying how if you want to dance with gopis in the Rasalila, first lift up over that hill. So it's the tendency is we want to imitate some portions, but not the other portions. Or if you want to imitate Lord Shiva, first drink the hala hala poison. You can't imitate the great souls. So this got me thinking that what is the reason why so many pastimes in the Bible externally, they seem like almost in a negative light. Like, not glorious. Not necessarily assuming all positive aspects that it could be. Why does this happen? So I made a list of different reasons that our acharyas have given why this is done. Just like, you know, like the fascinating, the story we're just mentioning. Why is it that that union happened out of wedlock? Could that Krishna have arranged for it to be within wedlock, so it's within dharmic principles? Why would Krishna arrange for this to happen in the Vyasadeva, the literary reincarnation? This kid was not a godhead, he's a son of such a king. Why would Krishna do that? So the first reason that is probably the most frequently given by our acharyas is that to drive home the point that we cannot use, as Prabhupada says, our teeny brain to calculate the arrangement of the Lord. This is very important. That the pastimes of the Lord are inconceivable. We can't wrap our head around it. Why is that important? It's important that it's inconceivable. Because if it were conceivable, it would be in our grasp. And if it's in our grasp, life would be so uninteresting. So this inconceivability is very important. It also contributes to the mystery of love. Love is beyond the mind and the intelligence and the ability to conceive. This is how the second is to communicate, to share, to impart very important lessons to mankind. Just like the example I gave. So, if I remember correctly, Vyasadeva's dissatisfaction was because Kali Yuga had already started. And Krishna, so Krishna was gone, which was the real reason that Kali Yuga started. And what one of the questions that the sages asked in the beginning of the Bhagavatam was, where have religious principles come for shelter? Krishna is not old. Bhagavatam is like the rising sun, it's not Krishna. It is the incarnation of Krishna after Krishna is gone. So that is the, the deeper meaning, lesson that we can learn from the dissatisfaction of Vyasadeva. Krishna wanted to teach us that that dissatisfaction came from, because Kali Yuga had already started. It started when Raksha Maharaj came and some of the artists started. So there's very deep philosophical points that Krishna is trying to communicate through these externally negative things. Vyasadeva being dissatisfied, being melancholy, devoted, and pure Buddhist practice. Supposed to be pure, 100%, like ecstatic, 100% of the time. That's the conception. Obstacles and tests. So why do we have obstacles and tests, which externally may seem like a bad thing? Why would Krishna make everything so perfect? Everything just goes smooth sailing, right? Spiritual world is perfect, so why would everything be totally smooth sailing and perfect? So, that's a very, very important question. Obstacles and tests even happen in the spiritual world, and even happen with completely liberated devotees of the Lord. And I was just reading yesterday a beautiful work by Vishnu Thakur called The Name of Sambhu. Have you heard? Beautiful work, isn't it?
I love it.
It is such a beautiful work. Anyone has free time, please read it. It's a very small book. That book changed my life. It describes the glories of course, those gopis, but the glories of Krishna, Shiva, that's what they call it. But the story, so before Prema Sampath, there was a famous commentary, right? One of the prominent acharyas about the reunion. The reunion verses. It was verse 17, 10, 17, I can't remember the chapter number, but 17 through 26. And the gopis asked the question, bewildering. Krishna, how could Krishna do that? And the answer to that question in the Acharya's commentaries is so mind-blowing. It is unbelievable, the heart of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Gopi said, okay, don't worry about giving this compassion. Just answer a question. There's different types of people. Which one of these types of people are you? Are you the type of person who gives unconditionally, like a mother to a child? Are you someone who just receives and doesn't give? Are you not grateful, ungrateful? Are you apalama, self-satisfied? Who are you? Which category are you? And so, it'll take like 2 days to go over the extent of the answers to these questions, because theologically, you know, very deep, deep, deep subject matters the top of days and days on. But the summary is, the Acharyas in the commentaries, and also Krishna himself and his answers refutes every single one. That no, not that. He said one interesting refutation was, why is his love not like a parent for his child? And the reason he gave is that a mother may love, you know, her son or daughter more. No, Krishna, he's equal to everyone. He doesn't favor anyone. But, of course, his devotees, he recipients, that's his, his nature. But, so his love is not that of a parent and a child. And he's not self-satisfied. He is self-satisfied. He's also not self-satisfied. Gopya, the ungrateful. Sadhavimakyam, Krishna says that devotees, my heart, I'm in their hearts. He's not ungrateful. So his reason, send him another reason why Krishna not devotees.
What's the question again?
Why
does anyone know the reason why? How could Krishna leave the gopis when they gave everything? They left everything for Krishna. And Krishna left. Not what you thought. But you know, before the last day.
Should Krishna love you more?
Haribo. So this is the commentary that the acharyas give about this, takes it to the next level. First of all, thank you, Guru. First of all, this is so beautiful. You just have to read it. But basically, essentially, to be separated from his devotees is more painful to Krishna than this for. That's the first point they try to say. So, Krishna's suffering to leave the gopis was even greater than the suffering the gopis had when Krishna left them. First, just because, and also because it was in Krishna's control, right? It was because of Krishna that he left. So he had to take the initiative to leave the gopis, and suffer the pain of being separated from the gopis, which is worse than death for Krishna. So his suffering is multiplied with guilt, with all of these other things that the gopis, they were just victims. And they were dealing with separation. And then Krishna had to be criticized, judged, for all time to come, and his only motivation is, there's a really famous verse, I wish I brought it here, about how like a billionaire, right, if he loses every single penny, let's imagine you had $1 billion, and you lost $1 billion, you'd feel pretty low. All you think about is $1 billion, right? Let's be honest. Every minute of every day, probably for a year, you'll be thinking about $1 billion. In the same way, Krishna wanted to give the greatest gift to the gopis of ever increasing ecstatic love. It was out of his magnanimity, his Ardharya Ras. So, this is a seemingly externally something negative, that Krishna left the gopis and they were suffering and whatever. We also hear similar past time. Remember how the story of Narada Muni, and he got the darshan of Krishna and then disappeared. And he's like, wait. Once you have that treasure, and it goes away, you can't think of anything but that treasure. And then Akashvani said, you will not see me in any of this life. Simply to increase your desire to be with me, to see me. So this is actually Krishna's greatest gift. These obstacles, these tests, is such a gift. Because it's such a perfect opportunity for us to churn whatever desire we have, to make it burn and brighter and brighter and brighter. Just like Arjuna, the acharyas explain how, remember in the second chapter, Arjuna gave such incredible philosophical opposition of the protest board. They're very powerful, very dharmic arguments, aren't they? The second chapter. That was the first chapter. Sorry, first chapter. I apologize. First chapter. Arjuna gave very sound arguments to Nathpati Kukshetra, right? One of them, yeah, very sound arguments. Like, you'd probably convince one of us, okay, you're right, yeah, don't fight the war, it's not the same. But, when Krishna came to the point of saying, Krishna, I don't know. That's when Krishna spoke. So Krishna was just testing Arjuna, really, it's a test. Because Krishna, he didn't interrupt Arjuna when Arjuna was argument after argument. Krishna, actually it says, of the sun, right? Krishna was smiling. yes, very, very. But then when Arjuna said, I am your disciple, I completely surrender, I'm bewildered, what should I do? That's when Krishna started to speak about Bhagavad Gita. There's so many instances of devotees being tested. Was it Sukadeva Goswami who tested Krishna Maharaj? I can't remember which conversation it was, but the question was asked, I think it was after the fifth canto. There's very detailed descriptions of suffering. Has anyone here read the fifth canto? Suffering. It's pretty scary stuff. So after that, Krishna was like, whoa, what do we, how do we like not have to suffer? And the answer that was given was to basically be like an elephant, atonement. But did Krishna Maharaj accept that? That doesn't seem right. But why would Krishna 3's devotee give the wrong answer? Test. I was actually just reading the pastime of Aswatthama and Krishna and Arjuna. Aswatthama beheaded the sons, the pink sons of the Draupadi. And Arjuna called him, and Krishna says, kill him immediately! Kill him now! Right now! And he said it like a few times. That you should not spare this life. Kill him. Kept him saying that. Arjuna didn't kill him. Why would Krishna just said to kill him? Why did Arjuna not kill him?
He had to check with his wife.
Arjuna knew Krishna was testing him. Arjuna knew that Krishna was testing him. Otherwise, see, Krishna's very tricky. He says he'll do one thing, wants you to do another. He's testing Arjuna. The acharyas actually say that. And Arjuna knew that Krishna was testing him. Vishwachakrita Thakur, in his commentary, he glorified Draupadi to the moon. I could not believe his commentary. He gave six reasons why Draupadi's compassion was so exalted, incomparable in the history of mankind. He gave six reasons. I don't remember the reasons, but it was incredible. It was just unbelievable. And actually, it was explaining how Krishna manifested four arms to keep Bhima and Draupadi apart because they are. He was like, kill him. So, actually, Krishna wasn't totally wrong because Vishwanathakura Thakur said that what Arjuna did to him did to Aswatthama, killed him and didn't kill him. So he actually did kill him. He did kill him. So another reason, why do we see things in the scripture that we don't think are perfect? Why do we see things like that? Well, we lessons, obstacles and tests to increase our love, which is a gift. Mother Kuikun said, that these qualifications, high birth, parentage, education, wealth, all of these things are actually disqualifications in the path of bhakti. And the opposite, being, you know, impoverished, being ugly, having no education, they're actually qualifications. So, shouldn't it be the other way around? Shouldn't these nice things be qualifications? Why are all the bad things qualifications for bhakti? And that's because we can see the glory of bhakti. That bhakti is so glorious that it doesn't depend on anything. We can see, I was thinking of personalities like Haridas Thakur, his former mentor, by the way. He was in Nahacharya. And then when they call it Raja Sridhar, he was a banana reseller. So you have so many different examples. This is the glorified bhakti. The bhakti is not dependent on anything except for devotion. Some more examples. Here's a good example. Blood Maharaj. So I remember hearing a class about the Guru Maharaj. He said, why did Nrsimha interfere? Because Blood Maharaj was tortured by his father, right? And why are we glorifying him to this day? Because he was tortured by his father. Right? He went through all of these, boiling oil, trampled by elephants, and all these things, is to glorify his devotees. But if none of us, all none of those things happened, the machine wouldn't appear. But also, we wouldn't be talking about Blood Maharaj, right? Would we be glorifying Blood Maharaj to the extent that we are? None of these things never happened. Oh, he's a pure devotee, he talked to his friends in school. What a nice little boy. That's all we would say. But no, he was throwing out clips, and he was like, jabbed with swords and knives, and thrown in pits of boiling oil. For that reason, for millions and millions of years, this has happened. And we're still glorifying Blood Maharaj. Valmiki, he was a dacoit and a hunter, just like Margari the hunter. And they received pure bhakti. And they're at the lowest of the low. This reminds me, I read in, there was a Vishwachakra, I think it was, in Vrindavan Mahimavita. They were comparing Gokul and Goloka. And Vishwachakra Thakur, he said that Gokul is actually greater than Goloka. Because the backdrop of Gokul, and Gokul is in the material world, quote unquote, and Maya is everywhere. And you have Goloka appearing in such a dark background that it shines brighter. I mean, they both shine the same. But when it's shining against such a dark backdrop, it shines even more. So in the same way, these negative, so-called negative things makes bhakti shine much brighter. And of course, how can we think of a greater example than Srila Prabhupada? Like if you watch the movie, the Hare Krishna movie, Has anyone watched the Harry Potter movie? Who hasn't watched it? Raise your hand. Okay. You haven't watched it? We'll get you a copy.
And her.
Two copies. So the Hare Krishna movie, would it be as interesting if Srila Prabhupada didn't come to America with 40 rupees? On a cargo ship, two heart attacks. All these things Krishna arranged so that we could glorify Srila Prabhupada. Does that much more sense? Am I correct? Thank you very much. Radhrachur Bhagavatam. Anyone like to add anything? Questions, comments? There's something in the back.
All right, thank you for your very informative class. When you were talking about that some devotees were getting tested in the spiritual world, can you get a reference to that, and also your opinion on why that is?
That is the spiritual world when Krishna left the gopis. That was the spiritual world. And these things happen all the time in the spiritual world. Like if you read Bhavana, Bhavana, Sangha, what is the name of that book? Bhavana, Sangha. This is the eightfold pastimes, daily pastimes. There's Bhavana Sangha.
Krishna Bhavanamrita.
What is it?
Krishna Bhavanamrita.
Maybe that's the one. Yeah.
Krishna Chakravarti.
Yeah.
Mahakavya.
You can, if you read that book, you should read that book. Because there's suffering constantly in the spiritual world. After you read it, you'll see what I'm talking about.
So where
Krishna leaves, you know.
Where is the book available?
It's about the daily activities.
I'm not sure where can you get the book.
Oh. Anywhere. I'm sure you can get it from
Acharya for you.
I'll sell you for $200.
But basically, suffering in the material world is not like suffering in the spiritual world. Suffering in the spiritual world is actually also ecstasy, right? It's also ecstasy, but it's just like, it's described that the love of God is like drinking poison and nectar at the same time. But that suffering in the spiritual world is not like the suffering we have here. Suffering here is due to the frustration of our selfish desires. But suffering in the spiritual world is just being separated. But that union, and within that separation, is the greatest union. That's explained by Acharya, that actually the highest intimacy of union is found in separation. Because, just like if you lose, your connection with your $1 billion is even greater after you lose it all. Right? When you have $1 billion, you might be thinking about your waffles that you need for breakfast, or you might be thinking about, going to Disney World or something. Right? And then, I have $1 billion. Oh, but then, but when you lose the $1 billion, you can't think of anything else except for the $1 billion, right? So it's that separation, that suffering, that is actually the highest form of sangha.
We've seen that some of the Lord's most exalted devotees of Gandham have gone through tremendous suffering. And one of the best cases in the Pandavas, what they went through, It stated that even exalted personality, even the sea, they would shed tears, to see how the Pandavas, you know, how they were initiated, spent 14 years.
And what did Kunti say? That the calamities keep on coming.
Yeah, she was, But, you know, I mean,
because when the calamities come, Krishna's there in those calamities. They're constantly thinking about Krishna.
Yeah,
in those calamities.
So another point, when she said that people who have wealth and beauty and strength and so forth cannot serve him with feelings, you know, she was. But at the same time, too, there are many people who have wealth and beauty and strength and everything, and serve Krishna with feeling also, I mean, that we've known in the past, you know. So it's not like an absolute, it's not an absolute saying. That's your
thank you for that point. That's a very good point, because Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, they were so beautiful, they were so wealthy, they had all of these, you know, incredible good qualities. Thank you.
Good. Myself, sometimes I like to try to understand things. So I found that this one verse that explains that basically we're talking about rasa tattva. So there is that verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita 265, where it says there's Krishna Tattva and then Bhakti Tattva and Prema Tattva Sara. That's the where we go. And it, but then the next line says Bhava Tattva, Rasa Tattva, Lila Tattva are. That this also, so when you put it into these different categories, then it makes everything easy to understand. Once you have your sambandha and you're engaged in devotional service and praying is the goal, then you can see how the ecstatic love for Krishna is manifest by these different rasas that make up the leelas. And in that way, all these things, the rasa tattva, so it seems that that's helpful for if you want to understand it. You can just relish it, which is...
You can try to understand it.
Yeah, here you go.
But also it's inconceivable, too.
But ultimately, just like in the Bhagavatam, the third verse, it says that relish this Bhagavatam. So it's all within the quality of that relish, because Krishna's that relish that the living entities exchange with.
Yeah, the rasa. Prashana Raj said so beautifully. What the purpose is it to... Don't try to get something from God.
I was thinking about how you found that Krishna, even he might get defamed, you know, especially seeing Lord Ram's case that went to that Sita. What I mean, I was thinking we're meant to develop love for Krishna. And if you think about this person, Krishna, how he is himself willing to be defamed. Like that's like the worst thing one can be in that situation. You know, he says that for infamy, better to die than to be infamous, you know, he tells Arjuna. I mean, how can we not love this person when he's willing to be defamed for his devotee and bring fame to his devotee? I mean, that's why he came as Lord Chaitanya, to glorify, you know, his devotee, Prabhupada's devotee. So this is amazing. Krishna is just an amazing person.
I agree.
But we still don't love him, so.
Thank you for bringing that point again, because it's such an important point. How was your reunion verses of the acharyas? Just mind blowing. The heart of Krishna. What he's willing to do to give everything. What is he willing to do? In the life of every devotee, this is actually in the commentary. The life of every devotee is a million times greater in Krishna's eyes than his own life. Millions of times.
lose it, you'll be thinking of it all the time. What if we never have $1 billion? Would you be thinking like we haven't achieved a love for Krishna? So the separation, how can, if you have a love, if you have half $1 million or $1 billion, would you be missing it? How are we supposed to develop this separation for Krishna if we haven't got it?
Very good question. Thank you, Babaji. Actually, that's actually one of the reasons why Krishna doesn't test us. I mean, he might test us a little bit, but if you look at the great souls and their tests, if that happened to us, forget about it. Right? Like, what happened to Blood Rush after us? Would we be thinking about Krishna? No. But we have our small tests, right? Because we have been received it. And Krishna gives us the tests so that we can handle them. But as the more he gives, the more he tests, the more he is. What's that verse? Sishru, Yaskahu, Nibrindharani. Krishna, he really wants to vary everything in your false ego. But you have to be very, very fortunate for that to happen. And it doesn't happen to those who can't handle it. Krishna does it. He tests you according to your ability to handle it. So, so whatever you do have, you go to that extent to feel separation. And to that degree, Krishna will test us. But we should be embracing those tests when we do come.
I remember one time hearing, I think it was in Govardhan Retreat, either it was Burijan Guru or in regards to Guru Prasad under this question. He said that if we hear, the past tense are there as we hear the past tense of Krishna's pastimes with his devotees. They allow us to enter in the pastimes by hearing the pastimes. And as we keep on hearing the pastimes, we will experience or we will feel that separation that the devotees are feeling. We have to keep on hearing. So that's one way that ultimately there. And that's why he has these pastimes. So we hear the pastimes and we can experience those feelings.
That's a very good point, because we were recently in the Sangha, we were discussing how do we cultivate our relationship with Krishna. And my Guru Maharaj, what he emphasizes is that don't focus so much on your relationship with Krishna. Focus on Yashoda and Krishna. Focus on the cavern boys and Krishna. Focus on Radha. These are the primary relationships. You're just menial servants of these eternal associates in the Kriya Krishna. Don't worry about your relationship with Krishna. That's so unimportant. Gopi Bhutta Bhagavata, Gopi, we're the servant, the damsels of Raja. And none of them actually should. So we just immerse ourselves in hearing about their pastimes, not their relationship. Our relationship is just reflective of those original two relationships. Sorry, I did not mean to elaborate. I just use part of it to say that.
Hare Krishna. So, in regards to Guru Prasad Mandali's question, if you are here on Prabhupada's Vyas Puja or Disappearance Day, you can totally feel how Krishna separation feels, I think. At least that's my humble opinion. When devotees speak about Prabhupada living or sharing Prabhupada's pastime, you can totally feel their love. And in that, you can
get a glimpse of that other separation. And Radha Swami says one thing, is when a devotee, first time the devotee gets tested, and then when devotee is extremely advanced, then Krishna puts himself in difficulty to increase their love. That's, I thought that was relevant to your class. Thank you.
I thought this was what I said. Was it, did I say something different?
No, I wasn't there.
Oh. So, did anyone else have anyone else?
Again, in this verse, we saw they say that in a woman body is intelligence. So, I would like to know your opinion about what is the good fortune in having such a bad situation, like a wrong body. To me, it's a curse. I see I can't be even learning verses and remembering them. I curse my body sometimes.
So, the question is,
what is the good fortune in having such a bad situation?
What is the good fortune?
Yeah, like a woman body.
Yeah. What is the good fortune in having a bad situation? Depends on what you do with that bad situation. It doesn't necessarily mean it's a good fortune. Because there are people who are materially happy that are equally, if not more, far away from Krishna than someone who is materially unhappy. So material unhappiness and material happiness has nothing to do intrinsically with fortune. Fortune is in category of its own. But if your aim is Krishna, then whatever you have is good fortune, whether it be bad or good. You could have a bad body, unhealthy body, sickness, poverty, whatever, or you can have $1 million. Wealthy, have a beautiful family, have beautiful kids, and that can also be good fortune also. But bhakti, the essential characteristic of bhakti is to go by your own here. So whatever we have, we use it in Krishna service. If we have disease, for instance, how do we use that in Krishna service? Well, we can use it in Krishna service because it can humble us, can help us call out to the Lord with deeper sincerity and helplessness. That's how we can utilize that in Krishna service. If we have $1 million, how can we utilize $1 million in Krishna service? We can give it to Krishna. We can give $1 million to Krishna. If you have talents, you can give it to Krishna. Does that answer your question? So, the materially negative things, materially positive things aren't intrinsically good fortune. It's what we do with them is the fortune. Does that make sense?
I see.
You want to give me another example? Are you saying you have a bad body? Is that what you're saying?
I'll think about it.
Okay.
Maybe can I add something? What Mataji was saying too, that maybe within the purport it states that a woman's body is considered like the low, you know, like when they compare the sutras.
Oh, is that what you're saying?
And but here.
Oh.
Everything. So the point is, That's there. I mean, that's there, and some people could understand it really and accept it. But once you utilize the body to serve Krishna, that's the lottery there, winning the lottery there.
All the greatest devotees of the Lord in Bhagavatam are women. the gopis, the Brahmas' wives, and you read the commentaries of the Acharyas, it's very clear. All of the eternal associates of Bodhicitta in their original form are women. Correct? So, in their original form, they're not men, they're women. Right? So, why are the greatest devotees of Krishna women? Because they're able to utilize an apparent dharmic disqualification so that they don't have to succumb to these big, fat egos that men have. Right? Because that men are very egocentric. Right? They have these big, fat egos. That's keeping us from Krishna. But women, you're so fortunate. You don't have these egos, these machismo problems that men have. This is Krishna's blessing to all of you in women's bodies. Don't see it as a curse, it's a blessing.
And Bhakti Tejaswami took Leadership in the Age of Higher Consciousness. Have you read that book?
Leadership in the Age of Higher Consciousness.
Number one.
And I read it a long time ago, but I have read it.
Yes. Okay, and he talked about the man on the female side of each one of us. So when we become more of a servant of Krishna, then there's a balance between the male and the female side of us. So it's because we don't want to just think that just because we're in a male body, especially if we're devoted.
Sure. That's a good point. It's not just the physical. There's actually, God is both female and female. My Guru Maharaj talks about this also. God is male and female. And like, and they have different characteristics, like nurturing characteristics. There's the chivalrous, there's all these different qualities, but God is both male and female. It's not just male, not just female, it's both. So in the same way, you know, we all know we're all female, in the ultimate sense. But we all have feminine and masculine qualities, and they need to be in balance. You know, you notice, you know, all the great acharyas are very soft-hearted, have that nurturing, loving, these feminine qualities. But again, like you said, it's not just based on the external physical life. There's some women that are having a lot of, you know, masculine tendencies, you know, and just in their behavior and personalities. So it's not just the external. Thank you. Good point.